This is Age of Treason Radio.
First thing I remember was asking Papa why. For there were many things I didn't know.
On the White Network.
By the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's gone. You better learn your past, you better learn your young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Good evening. Thanks for joining me again. The title of this installment is Twisted Identity. And let me just say where this fits in with previous discussions. Let me put it in perspective. I've talked previously about guilt tripping and the litany of sins that's used to induce the guilt trip, and how I see whites who are able to overcome that are then subjected to this pathologization and demonization, the name-calling, stupid, crazy, evil, and I've explored what's behind that and how that all works. And now this subject, identity and white identity, is the next step. I mean, assuming you can get over the other hurdles and get to this point, the next thing that you encounter is the people who say, well, who's white anyway? It's all so complicated, and what does being white mean anyway? What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, let's get back to talking about all the bad things that whites have done and that you should feel guilty about. So it's sort of the circular argument that keeps going around in circles, and that is the purpose, is just keep you confused and keep you going around in circles and make you think it's all hopeless to even think about this stuff. I know that that's not true. It's not hopeless, and there are answers to be found, and there's even hope to be had if you find the answers, and that's what I'm trying to help people do. But I do see one of our problems is a misunderstanding about some of the terms and concepts here, some of the fundamental terms that I'm talking about with identity, nation and nationalist, and culture and race, and how these things are related to each other. And this came up just recently. I got an email from an old close friend who he's been a very good sport in discussing politics with me, and even race and racial politics. And he knows where I stand on everything. But he described himself, probably a bit tongue-in-cheek, as a deracinated nationalist. But I really do get the feeling that he's sincere in trying to describe himself that way. And he's not really the only one who's ever had thoughts along similar lines. Lots of white people would like to think pleasant thoughts like that because they have internalized the idea that race is a bad idea. And they're not quite sure why, but they're certain it is a bad idea. Because of the guilt tripping, as I've explained before, the litany of sins, the negative emotions and negative associations having to do with whiteness. But even if you lay that stuff out in front of them, as I have with my friend, they still want to entertain this idea of a deracinated nationalism. And I think that that's absurd. And hopefully in some of the discussion tonight, I can explain why that's absurd and maybe convince him and convince other people as well. As I say, the idea isn't new. It's called cultural or civic nationalism. And unfortunately, those terms are get it at about half of what nationalism really is, the ideological half. As I've discussed previously, there's really two parts to most identities, especially race, nation, and ethnicity, have both an ideological half and a and a biological half. And to say half is just in broad terms, it's part of both is involved to some extent, not necessarily exactly half. But usually cultural or civic nationalism is what it means is the preservation of traditions and holidays and you know, all the trappings of the ideological part of a nation, its structure, its laws, its traditions, as I say. And it's usually contrasted with racial nationalism or ethnic nationalism, which are in fact redundant terms. They're putting an emphasis on the racial part of the nationalism or the ethnic part of the nationalism. And these things are really, it's overkill to call it ethnic nationalism, because that's what nationalism is, or racial nationalism for that matter. The real essence is biological, and these things are connected to each other. Even the culture is springs from the race, and even though they shape each other, it's really, I think, the race that comes first and is foremost. The word ethnicity actually has Greek roots. Nationality has Latin roots. This is an interesting issue. You know, some people may be confused about what's the distinction exactly between ethnicity and nationality. Well, there isn't much of a distinction, really. They're the same concept. It's just that one comes from the Greek and one comes from the Latin, one word from each. Ethnic, when I looked it up online, and I think I got this from Wikipedia, says relating to or characteristic of a human group having racial, religious, linguistic, and certain other traits in common. It's from the Greek word ethnikos, and ultimately from the Greek word ethnos, which means race. So I'm not making things up here. Ethnicity, nationality, and race are all part and parcel of the same thing. Looking up on Wikipedia, ethnic nationalism, it turns out that Herodotus, it cites Herodotus, an ancient Greek thinker, as the first person who stated the main characteristics of ethnicity, with his famous account of what defines Greek identity. And he lists kinship, and it's some Greek word I can't pronounce, meaning of the same blood, language, another Greek word, speaking the same language, meaning speaking the same language, and cults and customs, meaning a Greek word meaning of the same habits of life or life. Now, Herodotus lived about 2,500 years ago. So this knowledge has been around for a long, long time, and I would venture to guess that it's been around longer than Herodotus, too. He's just the first Westerner to put these thoughts down and have them persist. Looking up nation, again in Wikipedia, turns out that the word comes from an old French word, nation, N-A-C-I-O-N, which in turn originates from the Latin word natio, related by birth. And that makes sense. Nation has the same roots, Latin roots, as the word natal or natality, which has to do with the womb, you know, being born, being related by birth. So as I say here, nation, ethne, race, these are all related concepts. They're pretty much the same thing. The Wikipedia entry for nation goes on to say that a nation may refer to a community of people who share a common language, culture, ethnicity, descent, or history. Again, that matches the definition of ethnicity, so they're the same things. I'm just trying to drive home the point here. They go on to say, and this is interesting too here, in this definition, a nation has no physical borders. And I think that's true. I agree with that. It doesn't necessarily correspond to the borders of a state. Continuing here, However, it can also refer to a people who share a common territory and a government. For example, the inhabitants of a sovereign state, irrespective of their ethnic makeup. This is exactly where I think the twisted part of twisted identity comes in, is this detachment of nation and nationality from the biological roots and that having that in common, that group of people. Calling the United States a nation, as people still do to this day, in fact, it's common for our political elite to refer to the nation as a nation, is nonsensical. It doesn't really apply, not in the original sense of the word nation. And Wikipedia is basically admitting as much here, that that it has this other meaning. And then it talks about where this came from, or how, just in the very next paragraph, according to Joseph Stalin, writing in 1913 in something titled Marxism and the National Question, quote, "A nation is not a racial or tribal, but a historically constituted community of people." He's basically just asserting that it doesn't have to do with biology, which I think is false, but he had his own agenda there, a Marxist agenda. Quote, "A nation is not a casual or ephemeral conglomeration, but a stable community of people." He's admitting there, at least, the reality that everyone can see for themselves is that a nation tends to be a stable community of people. "A common language is one of the characteristic features of a nation. A nation is formed only as a result of a lengthy and systematic intercourse, as a result of people living together generation after generation." That's right. I would say about that that the lie that is this phrase, the nation of immigrants, that has become very popular to describe the United States is another one of these nonsensical terms. A nation of immigrants, at least if those immigrants all come from different nations, isn't really a nation at all. It's an oxymoron, that term. It goes on and on. The main point I want to make here is that Joseph Stalin, I mean, Wikipedia thinks it cites Joseph Stalin as an authority on what a nation is. This is the beginning of the twisting. It ends the part talking about Stalin. It says, according to Stalin, his definition would exclude Jews as they have no common territory. Stalin talks about having a common territory being one of the characteristics of a nation. But Wikipedia goes on to say, an alternative view expressed by Otto Bauer, author of Social Democracy and the Nationalities Question, published in 1907, that, quote, "A nation is an aggregate of people bound into a community of character by a common destiny," unquote, which would include Jews, Wikipedia is very helpfully pointing out. And I just want to point out it's Wikipedia there injecting Jews into this whole question of nationality or not. So, you know, I've said at the outset of this identity discussion here that this is going to involve whites and it's going to involve Jews. And it's not, you know, the Jewish role in this is not some sort of conspiracy theory. They are in it up to their eyeballs. So for this section here, this little bit, I want to sum it up and say that language, culture, history, the heroes, the myths that are involved in that culture and history are the characteristics of ethne, nation, or a race. They're all related to each other, and this is the essence of group identity, the kind of group identity that I'm discussing here in this series. So I've been talking very generally about identity, and let's talk here about what is identity. I ended the last installment quoting from Humpty Dumpty, a bit from Lewis Carroll's story. And the quote, the significant quote here was, "When I use a word, it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less." And the idea that I was setting up there is the arrogance of twisting the definitions of words to mean whatever you want them to mean, and how cultural Marxists do that. And that this I'm going to move now and talk about get a little closer to white identity. And in talking about it, I think I've covered the ground here about what identity means in general and the general ideas and terminology behind it. But I think now it's a good time, and we need to take stock of the environment around us, the reality in which whites exist today. And it's a hostile environment. It's hostile to white identity. It's anti-white. I've said that before. I've asserted it before. I'm going to provide some evidence of that here now. And we're going to take a little tour of this strange landscape of contemporary mainstream identity. You know, when you look it up on the internet and see, well, what does identity mean? You want to know about it, so you go searching. And what you find is that it's you're immediately linked to identity politics. Even if you just search for identity, you immediately run into all sorts of people talking about identity politics. And, you know, this, just to give my overview of this up front, you know, I see this as an elaborate play on words and ideas. It's very tricky. It's double meanings, and, you know, I've talked about in my previous installments the tricks that and the pitfalls that whites are misled in some of this the rhetoric that's involved here and in other other work being done by cultural Marxists. And you know, what's really going on here in this mainstream ideas about identity is it's a who-whom struggle between groups, and you can see that it's pretty blatant once you take off the thin veil of the high-minded universalist rationale that's draped over it, and the words that are sometimes used to disguise it. But when you look closely, as we're going to, you can see that this struggle between groups is most of what is under the covers. This, I say cultural Marxists, I don't mean to euphemize there. I think it's a pretty good description of the people and the phenomena as a whole. And I talked about who they are and what cultural Marxism is, you know, how its main source is the Frankfurt School. I talked about that in Pathologization and Demonization. And just to sum it up, it's cultural Marxism is essentially a fusion of Marxism, an economic-based criticism, and Freudianism, which is a psychoanalytic social criticism. And these are criticisms of white society by Jews. The source of these critiques and the fusion of them is fundamentally Jewish. There are non-Jews that are involved, and that's why it's probably more proper to just say cultural Marxists to catch them all. But it shouldn't be denied, and it shouldn't be overlooked that the source is fundamentally Jewish. It's a long-term, ongoing, ever-evolving assault. And what's an assault on? It's an assault on white identity. It's a critique of whites and their identity. So it's no wonder that whites are, after 200 years of this, are confused about whiteness and that whiteness has such negative emotions associated with it. It's been a long, long campaign that Jews have waged against it. So, you know, I said at the beginning, gee, who's white anyway? And, you know, what does being white mean beyond lots of bad stuff? Well, this is where it comes from. It comes from this cultural Marxist analysis and assertions of whites as bad people. It doesn't come out of thin air. It doesn't spring up naturally on its own. It's coming from people who are pushing it. So in the headlines just today, I ran into, it's been over the last couple of days, actually, it's the presidential selection season here in the United States, and identity is in the headlines. This fellow named Russell Simmons, on August 11th, I guess, sent a series of twits, and he well, let me describe first who he is and what he was reacting to. He's a multimillionaire, apparently, a person of color, a black fella. He looks kind of whitish, but identifies himself as black. Founder of Def Jam Records. That's the source of his money. He got filthy rich, I guess, being a record producer. And he was reacting to Mitt Romney, the Republican presidential candidate, picking Paul Ryan as his vice president. But the thing to just keep in mind here about Russell Simmons is he's rich, he's famous, and he's not white. So what he tweeted, I'll just review it very quickly here. He says, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, two men who will destroy our people. And then his next message was, with Ryan as VP choice, women's, gays, minorities, and all under undeserved, and it was a bit of a Freudian slip because he meant to write underserved, but it came out as undeserved, and compassionate people now have a clear direction, Obama. The next one, now women have a clear choice for president, Barack Obama. African Americans have a clear choice for president. Latinos have a clear choice for president. Compassionate people have a clear choice for president. Underserved communities have a clear choice. LGBTQ community. It's the lesbian, gays, bis, trans, and queers, I guess. All minorities have a clear choice. All young people have a clear choice. So this was a series of Twitters that he put out. I guess it seems like a bit of backpedaling or trying to soften his original statement, which was pretty strong. These two men will destroy our people. And so the obvious question in probably a lot of people's minds was, who is he talking about when he says our people? Who does he mean? Well, he goes on with these other series of twits to describe what he means by our people. And even if he's basically lying about it, he does a pretty good job there of describing the Democrat coalition, the opponents to the Republicans in our political two-party system, is a coalition of all of these identities. Some of them are racial identities. Some are there's one, two sexual ones. You know, the degenerate, strange, LGB whatever, and women. And he even throws in young people. They'd like to split young people from us as well. He links in all of these tweets to an article that he wrote, which was sort of reveals this trick that I'm talking about here, where, you know, the article is all about classic Marxist terms of class conflict, and he paints it as a rich versus poor thing, as if everybody who's a Republican is rich and everybody who's a Democrat is poor. And that's not real. And he spends that whole article talking about that. He doesn't mention gays. He doesn't mention Latinos. He doesn't mention African Americans. But in his series of tweets, that's what he mentions. You know, he sort of slipped there. He gave the game away by mentioning African Americans and Latinos and minorities. And the minorities is that sort of code word for non-white. He implies basically that whites are, Republicans are, rich are, overserved are, non-compassionate. Because all the compassionate people, of course, identify with the Democrats and the minority coalition. You know, I don't want to focus too much on him because he's, you know, basically nobody. He's a celebrity. He's not an important person when it comes to creating ideas. And he didn't create these ideas. He's just delivering them. I think it's worth noting this because it has gotten a lot of attention, and the Republicans are responding to this, but of course they're responding to it in a deracinated way. You know, they're acting scandalized that somebody could talk about our people and be so divisive. But the fact of the matter is that Simmons represents the reality. This is the reality. All of these other groups with their identities have they're very strong in their identities, and they feel themselves part of a coalition, however strong that is. And they're not white. He didn't mention white people in there at all, unless you want to say you're a compassionate white person. which is what he wants. This is where the psychological tricks come in, you know, that, of course, if you're a compassionate white person, you should be part of their coalition. It's only those evil, crazy, stupid, crazy, evil, racist people who want to vote Republican. Let me move here. I think I have a few minutes yet to talk about, to get into this part here. Simmons is just, as I say, he's just expressing what is already established, the ideas and the ideological superstructure that's already out there. It's just one expression of it. So I don't want to make too much of it. Back to Wikipedia on identity politics now. It defines identity politics as political arguments that focus upon the self-interest and perspectives of self-identified social interest groups and ways in which people's politics may be shaped by aspects of their identity through race, class, religion, gender, sexual orientation, or traditional dominance. And until the traditional dominance part there, I was reading this and thinking to myself, well, this is part of the trick. This is a very unbiased description, sort of in the sense that I've been trying to talk about identity up until now, that could apply to anybody, regardless of race, class, religion, gender, whatever. Those are just the different ways in which people can identify. And they're not saying that one type of identity is better than another or more valid than another until they get to that traditional dominance business, because there's the hint of the litany of white sins coming in. They don't say it there, but as we get deeper into this, you'll see it's clear. It's, you know, just behind the curtain. This is just the curtain. This is the part that sucks white people in. Now, I have to say, too, that I know as a person, a former conservative, conservative-leaning thinking person, and who knows a lot of people who still are embroiled in that kind of politics, that identity politics has a sort of bad taste for those people. They, Republicans, conservatives, like to think that identity politics is just this nasty stuff that comes from the left. They're right about that. But what they're doing is throwing out the baby with the bathwater there in overlooking the fact that identity is real. The identity politics is stacked against whites. That part they sense, I think. But at the same time, they want to be a deracinated nationalist. And so, you know, that's the conundrum for them. So I've got a lot more to talk about here about the leftist ideas of identity and identity politics and how this is the source of the taboo against white racial identity, and how anything and everything is imaginable is fodder for identity, as they say here on Wikipedia, but not race, which means not whiteness. And we'll get more into this in the next installment. I'm looking forward to it. There's lots to talk about yet having to do with identity. So join me next time, and I'll see you then.